Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here, Friday edition of the show. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. And Canucks host the Pittsburgh Penguins. Of course, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow. And always a big deal when Sidney Crosby comes to town. It's a hockey night game Saturday night. All eyes in that time slot will be on the Canucks and the Penguins. And I did enjoy this. So we got a tweet from one of our regular listeners, Graham, on Twitter, who said, you know what needs to be discussed? Our market can't handle more than a couple days off during between games because the drama starts up for literally no reason. And I do think it's funny that not only it's this three-day break between games, but then leading into one of the more high-profile games on the schedule, right, which is hosting Sidney Crosby on Saturday night, nationally televised game, obviously. So it's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be a really, really potentially fascinating affair tomorrow, right? And I can already predict and sense the incredible narrative spinning that can come out of this one tomorrow, depending on which way it goes. But let's not like get mad at wild narratives coming out of it. Pittsburgh has had a very
get mad at wild narratives coming out from of Saturday's game.
Yeah.
Oh, it is an all time. Sorry, where you can't put that down and not have me pick it up. What
are
you
talking? No, I'm absolutely going to get mad at it.
What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm already pre mad about it. The narratives that could come out of Saturday's game, right? A schedule victory as is,
yeah,
against a team that struggled in the early going. I think it's like an all-time bad take hazard waiting to happen. Like, we are going to be cooking next week, buddy.
We're already cooking.
Are we?
Oh yeah, man. I listen, like, so Dom,
I feel like we're cooking, but what we're making is something like I don't want. You know, like, I'm not interested in this stew.
Yeah. Well,
are truly in like 2 weeks of successful team gets debated solely through the lens of armchair psychoanalysis of a star player who's playing fine but not great. What are we doing here?
What was the
this is crazy. Phrase, like, this is wild.
The phrase Frank Saravelli had to remember in a column a couple years ago, I think now, where he was like describing what every team was doing ahead of the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And his line for the Canucks was gathering ingredients for a weird stew. That's how we're cooking in your eyes.
Yeah,
we're gathering 100%. Ingredients for a weird stew.
Yeah.
No, this, I listened.
We're making like beef bourguignon, but with like some Mexican fusion elements or something, and I'm like, this is odd.
This is not what I want. Yeah. Not what I care for. But anyways,
it'll probably be good for other people.
It is wild. Like, the tenor of the conversation after a three-game win streak to end a road trip and come home and, you know, have some time off, and usually it's all sunshine and rainbows, right? When you're in that situation and everyone's talking about how the team's going in the right direction, they've turned things around, and it's been pretty surreal so far this week. We'll see how it plays out tomorrow against the Penguins. But as you mentioned, I mean, the Penguins, kind of a fascinating opponent coming in, right? Like, they have had, if one thing they've had for sure so far this year is extremely high event games in either direction, right? Like, they've gone 6-0 loss, 6-3 win, 4-2 loss, 6-3 win, 6-5 overtime win, 4-1 loss, 6-3 loss, and then losing 4-3 in a shootout to Calgary most recently. Now they play Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers tonight in Edmonton. So they've lost three games in a row. They've given up a ton of goals. As I mentioned, Tristan Jarry was sent back to Pittsburgh.
And that's a 6 o'clock start, right? For us?
For us, yeah.
So that's at least an advantage, right? Like, it's not, it you're better back-to-backs are the ones where you lose an hour. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, they'll lose an hour coming back to Vancouver. That gets them in bed slightly earlier. The game starts at 6 local. That's an extra hour of rest. I mean, it's small edges.
But marginal stuff.
No. But if you're going to have to play back-to-back, this is like a much better
not,
one than it could be.
Not a huge amount of travel either, obviously. What are you expecting to see? Like, what are your early takeaways on Pittsburgh and their season so far?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Penguins, I think they are in that stage that teams get to where their great players are still great, right?
Mm-hmm.
But aren't necessarily capable of like dragging a good team to greatness. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think any of Sidney Crosby, Letang, Carlson, or Malkin, right, could be like the third best player on a great, great team.
Mm.
Second best player. I mean, Crosby could still be the best player, yes. But man, you'd have to have a lot around him.
Yeah.
I just don't know if their core group is at an age where, well, first of all, injury risk increases, right? The chances of diminishing returns increase significantly. And I just think it gets harder and harder to do it against, you know, you think about the Canucks crew in comparison. I mean, JT Miller's the oldest. He's, what, 5 or 6 years younger than the youngest of those guys?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a massive difference in age between these core groups. And so, you know, I just think they're in that stage of, like, managed decline. And, you know, they're still doing okay, I think. Like, I think the goaltending is a lot of their issue, like a massive amount. You know, only the Sharks, Avalanche, no, not even, only the Avalanche and the Predators and the Flyers have worse goaltending at 5-on-5 in the early going this season. So we'll see what it looks like when it normalizes. It's only a small handful of games. Their underlying profile looks fine. Crosby's still one of the 15 best players on the planet. And you know, a guy I think you'd pick higher than that if you needed to win one game tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
right? Just because he's Sid, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, I look, it's going to be a fun test for the Canucks, but I feel like after the Canucks really owned Vancouver for an extended period of time, it does feel like this matchup's tilted a bit in recent seasons. You know, that's why the Canucks are pretty heavy favorites going into Saturday's game.
Yeah, and I think even beyond the goaltending, right, and as you said, it will stabilize a little bit, even if they don't go on to have good goaltending or anything this season. The underlying defensive numbers don't necessarily look great either, so I would just look at this as an opportunity for the Canucks to continue trying to build that offensive confidence, right, and show off that ability to generate quality looks that they started to show towards the tail end of that road trip, and especially against the Blackhawks. Not that it'll be as easy, right? Obviously, a lot, just very, very different teams, the Penguins and the Blackhawks, but I think a chance for the Canucks to at least start this homestand off on the right foot, and always just a thrill to have Sidney Crosby playing in Vancouver. I did love, by the way, because he's doing the tour through Western Canada, and they asked Connor McDavid who should be the captain for Canada at the Four Nations, and he was like, yeah, Sid, of course, and there seemed to be a lot of attention paid to that quote, where it's like, what world are we living in where Sidney Crosby is not going to be the captain of Team Canada? That could not be a more obvious decision to my eyes. But anyways, people paid a lot of attention to Connor McDavid saying the same thing about that earlier in the week. It's like, yeah, he's Sidney Crosby.
No, but you know what? It's still cool to hear from McDavid.
I don't know, I guess.
No, it wouldn't be cool to hear from anyone else, but to hear it from McDavid is cool.
There, it would just be so insane for him to say anything else.
I know, but there is an argument, like, when you think about what Team Canada could look like, I mean, Crosby's obviously on the team.
Yeah, yes.
But is he the first line center ahead of McDavid? No.
No.
Okay. Is he the second line center ahead of MacKinnon?
Well, I would put MacKinnon on a line with McDavid, but anyways, probably not. No.
No. Well, I would actually think Crosby and MacKinnon would be more likely to be on a line.
Mm-hmm.
Crosby probably plays center because of the draws, but you know, my point being, like, there is actually a player in the league of a stature that has eclipsed Crosby's at this moment in time, and for that player to be like deferring to the guy who scored, you know, the most historic goal in national men's hockey history this side of Paul Hendrickson is cool. Like, I actually thought that was cool for McDavid to do.
I was like, why are we paying so much attention to this? We know who it's gonna
be. We know who it's gonna be, but it's cool to hear McDavid say it.
All right, sure. Crosby's just at that level historically where it doesn't matter really what his profile is right now. It's like you can't have him on the team and not make him the captain.
100%.
You know what I mean? It's just like, he would obviously be the guy everyone's looking to anyways, right? So you may as well just make it official.
Yeah,
well,
and he's
him
still
the captain.
A great player.
Yeah.
Like, he's still an elite player. So yeah, very cool.
All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
By the way, did you see in my latest at The Athletic that I did a whole thing about how it's not a paper transaction?
Yes.
I'm so sick of hearing it.
Targeted at me specifically.
No. You were one of 15 offenders yesterday. But like,
I read it. I was like, wow, I really got under Drance's skin.
No, it was
totally accidentally and like just not even thinking about it, saying it.
There are paper transactions in the NHL, but these are not one of them. These are not them. So please, we have to stop calling them paper transactions. These guys were not papered down. They were sent down. In fact, it hit them in the wallet, or at least it did for Baines.
Sheldon texts in, is Crosby being the captain as obvious as Gretzky taking a penalty shot in Nagano should have been? Is it a crazy hot take for me to say that I don't think it's obvious that Gretzky should have been one of the shooters? Like, he was way more of a setup. I've looked before. I think he had 20 goals that season, like 25 goals, something like that. So he was still putting the puck in the net. But it's not as if he was one of the elite goal scorers in the NHL at that point. I don't know why we're getting off on a tangent. I mean, Sheldon texted in about it. But I've always just, like, I've thought, now, if you want to say it shouldn't have been Ray Bourque, that's fine. That's a defenseman. I completely understand that. But I've always thought how do you not put Wayne Gretzky out there? It's like, well, he wasn't a dominant goal scorer at that point in his career. I've always thought that criticism was a little
strange. Who were the shooters?
It was, I don't know. I have to go look. Bourque was the one that stands out, right? Because you're sending a defenseman out there instead of Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah. Did Linden shoot?
Let's find out.
Because that's the real take, by the way. Like, I'm so serious. That's the real take here. Okay.
That he shouldn't have, or that he...
Here's the shooters. Fleury, okay. Missed. Bourque missed. Nieuwendyk missed. Lindros missed. Shanahan missed. So the real take here, that's actually a Canucks take,
yeah,
is Mark Crawford's error was not passing over Wayne Gretzky.
It was passing over Trevor Linden.
It was passing over Trevor Linden, one of the most effective shootout players of all time.
But we didn't... Did we know that then?
Well, how could we have? We didn't have a shootout.
We didn't have a shootout. So you'd just be going off his like penalty shot.
You didn't take a look. You didn't take a look and be like, hey, you know, this 6'4" guy that just skates in and rips it top corner, yeah, every single time, like clockwork. Yeah. It, like, physically, because of Linden's length, right? He's literally shooting this at an unstoppable angle for any goaltender. If anyone's going to figure it out, it'd be Dominik Hasek. He'd probably just like... I don't even know what he'd do, but because Dominik Hasek is such a genius of, you know, unparalleled scope when it comes to sort of spatial awareness and getting your bot, like, being in the way. It's the best of all time. But that's the real take. The real take is backseat driving, not Monday morning or Tuesday morning quarterbacking Mark Crawford, but like 25 years on quarterbacking Mark Crawford. The error was... too little Canucks content in the shootout.
That's right. Anyways, I've always thought...
I'm serious, though.
I've always thought the... And the other guys, who'd you run through? Theo Fleury, like, no problem with that.
Yep.
Bourque, I do have a problem. Nieuwendyk, sure. Shanahan, sure.
Lindros,
sure. No problem with that.
None of them are bad.
No. Bourque, I do have a problem with, and yeah.
Linden.
I don't know who the other guys
more Trevor
were,
Linden.
But I don't know that it would have been Wayne Gretzky would have been my first choice to go up there. Anyways, I'm glad we got a chance. Glad we got a chance to really weigh in on that. Just in time. All right, 650 is the Dunbar Lover text line. And we got some non-Elias Pettersson takes coming in to the inbox. Some questions as well. And this one's from Tanbeer. I'm picking up on something you were talking about earlier in the show, Drancer, was we mentioned that Eric Brandstrom and Arshdeep Baines both come back up and that they didn't spend the kind of maximum theoretical time on the Abbotsford roster that they could have, right? They could have missed practice today and been called up for the game tomorrow, but instead they were with the group out at UBC today. And Tambier texts in, what in Baines' game do you see Drancer at the club is excited about? I see some good passes in the O-zone that haven't led to too much. He's also been very responsible defensively. That's from Tanbeer. And it does feel like Arshdeep Baines has kind of gone through... There's this normal process that we talk about, right, where when a player is just breaking into the NHL, they're a young player, they're a prospect, they've had success in the AHL, there's so much excitement and so much hype, fans are often willing to look past the warts in their game. Then you become a little bit more established, and all of a sudden the nitpicking really starts, right? It feels like Arshdeep Baines has gone through that process at hyperspeed. Like, you know, he's gone from being someone that fans were really, really excited about last year. And now already I do start to see coming into the inbox and on social media a lot, the questions of what is this guy bringing to the team? What's your sense of how the organization views him? Not even just in the long run, but how he can contribute to the team this year.
Yeah. I mean, well, the long run, we kind of know he's going to get a 2-year one-way deal and get a chance to break into the NHL. And If he doesn't do it, the club's probably going to be pretty reluctant to have a one-way salary in the American League, and around we go. Like,
mm-hmm.
he's on this pathway that the Canucks have had a variety of promising young players sort of hit. It I guess where he's sort of different is he's an undrafted free agent who's made something of himself getting even to this point, and not just something, but something pretty incredible. It's wild given the path yep. that he's taken to get here. You know, he wasn't even drafted in his first OHL priority selection draft year, you know, to be in on an NHL roster today, yep. given that background, you know, is he's already a massive statistical outlier, and, you know, will have to continue to be if he's going to carve out a lengthy NHL niche. Now, what fans, I think, are reacting to is just, I mean, what? This guy took 11 games in his career to get his first NHL point, and when he did, it was a secondary assist. You know, I think a lot of what he...
And then that got rescinded, I believe.
Oh, it did?
It did. Yeah,
oh,
he did.
Brutal.
So he's still pointless.
Tough break.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is that the scoring rates are nothing, right? He has 4 shots across 11 games. Only 13 shot attempts. That's, you know, there's not been a lot there, frankly. Yep. So I understand why people are wondering, like, hey, what's this guy bring? The thing is while there's not a lot of showy stuff there, there's a lot of substantive stuff there. There's a lot of, like, smart plays, core strength, won battles along the walls, sharp touches. It hasn't led to offense yet for him. I wouldn't say that he's been at the level of a play driver yet, although he seems to, like, get what his line does. I don't think he holds a line back right now. And I think the club sees just, like, really smart guys still getting comfortable at the NHL level, great American League scoring rates, the highest motor off the ice in mm-hmm. terms of discipline. We want to bet on smart, hard-working guy figuring it out. And I think where... Look, all young players go through this. Your possibility and hope, right? And then you are guy who can't get it done.
Yeah, your guy who's underperforming. Guy who doesn't have a point in 11 games.
Very quickly it changes as the reality of life in the NHL sort of sets in. Now, if we get to game 30 and we're talking about Arshdeep Bains having no points, obviously we're going to be having a very different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But 11 games, you know, 8 last year, sort of bouncing in and around the lineup, he's definitely had opportunity. He scored in the preseason. I mean, you saw what he could do, and those were pressure moments, right? Like, I think that's a big part of this, right? The whole meet pressure with pressure thing. With a chance, you know, like, Baines basically had to score to make it to the final game of the preseason.
Yeah.
And he did. And then in that final game of the preseason, he produced again. So, on some level... We haven't seen him score in regular season games, but we've almost seen him score in, like, a higher pressure moment in the preseason. And I know that seems counterintuitive, but for him, the stakes are higher
yeah.
in that moment. For Ratu, the stakes are higher in that moment. For Phil DiGiuseppe, the stakes are higher in that moment. And it was Baines who was the guy coming through and sort of playing well. So I think that's where the organization's at with him. They're excited about him, like, straight up very excited about him. I wondered yesterday if the club might sort of expedite getting a 2-year extension done with him if they're going to continually
yep.
send him up and down. I think that's far more likely to be an off-season move at this point. But the club's happy for him, excited about him, and I think what they see is just a smart, hardworking player who has more offense than he's shown to this point. It just hasn't necessarily translated the NHL level yet, but the club's confident that he can at least contribute in a bottom six role, and I think he can too. I just don't know if, you know, top line off the hop, because that was sort of the first shot he got, right, was with Miller, and
mm-hmm.
that's probably a little too high. That's probably a little much. You know, that was the Tampa game too, where things really one of the Vancouver's worst games of the season, and that's also part of it, right? That he gets that big shot on the top line, people are like, have we seen enough? And then the team lays an egg. I don't think they laid an egg because of him.
Because of Arshdeep Bains, but it doesn't help the perception, obviously.
That's what I'm saying. So,
yeah.
So, you know, anyway, well, at some point, he'll have an opportunity to, and if he can seize it, there's going to be some interest internally in seeing what he can do.
And I do think the thing that separates Bains from, you know, sometimes you see AHL player X come up and, hey, they bring the energy, right? There's that adrenaline,
yeah.
but you can tell the puck skills aren't there. That's not so much of an issue with Arshdeep Bains, right? And so I don't know that you're sacrificing a ton of offense by having him in the bottom six. Now, if you're comparing it to Daniel Sprong and somebody texts in, like, why is he in the lineup over Sprong? It's Adam from Poco texts in. Why is he in the lineup over Sprong? He says, I don't mind Baines, but he's fine. But Sprong has plus offensive traits. Baines is mid across the board. Well, I think they're trying to reinforce that the defensive identity, right? That Arshdi Baines is doing a better job of playing to that identity. And there is a gap offensively. But it's not like you're getting a zero. I mean, you are because he hasn't scored yet. I get that. But you can tell that the puck skills are higher than your typical, like, 13 forward necessarily at this point.
Okay, so what line do you want Sprong to play on?
It would have to be the fourth line right now.
With Nils Åman and Pugh Suter.
Yep.
And then if he doesn't produce but also does a Daniel Sprong-like thing, are you going to say Daniel Sprong has to come out of the lineup again?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why put Daniel Sprong into the lineup in a position where he's not going to succeed? You know, like, Sprong, if he comes back, or when he comes back, he should get a look.
That's going to be tough, though. Like, where's he getting the look right now?
Well, not right now.
Or where's he getting the look when Dakota Joshua is coming back?
Well, things change quick. Well, yeah. Where's Dakota? I mean, it's even hard to shoehorn Joshua into this lineup.
It really is. Yeah.
You know, honestly, though, Joshua, because of his hands in tight, I actually like the idea of, like, Sprong with Suter and
Joshua.
Like, okay, that to me sounds like a worthwhile spot. Suter with Amon and Baines, that feels like a tough spot to put Sprong into and be like, hey, but you know, I guess he could drive the offense. Look, I like Sprong. I don't know that we've seen enough for the club to be out on him. But I also think if you're going to have an all offense, like, designated hitter type on this roster, a la Kuzmenko, like, man, it's an awful lot better when they only make $1 million than when they make $5.5 million. That said, you know, I'm sure there's some disappointment with how quickly Sprong's audition ended from the side of the Sprong camp, and the Canucks will have to be careful about how they manage it here. Because what'll happen, you know, if he doesn't get in at some point is, you know, you get a call from an agent, and this is like classic. This isn't me speculating or anything. This is just like how the world works. I'm just going to tell you the ways of the world in the NHL. Agent says, hey, look, if you're not going to give my guy a shot, put him on waivers at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least see if someone else needs him.
Yeah, and also...
And that's where you get to pretty fast if you don't take care of these sorts of guys in contract years with high-profile agents, in his case, Pat Brisson of CAA.
You can do all the work in practice that you want with a player that you're trying to get more out of, trying to teach them the defensive side of the game. That's great, but you got to get them into the game, right? Like, yeah. They need to get the reps in the game level. You can only do the practice work for so long before you test it out.
But also just like... This is the Sprong experience to some extent, right? Like, he's going to come into the lineup and he's going to do something so incredibly world-class that you look back at the week that he sat and think, that was nuts. This guy's unbelievable. Look at the shot. Look, this is unbelievable.
But then the next game, what's he going to do?
The next game, he's either going to be, well, not just the next game. You're either going to get a week of invisible play or you're going to get actual negative contributions.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be like, oh. But also, if he can streak together, and we've seen this happen in his career many times, if he can, you know, feather together like 3 months of good play, it's going to be like, this guy's a key driver of the team's success. But this is going to happen again. Like, that's been the Sprong experience throughout his career. A truly elite skill set in sort of the most maddening possible package. And I mean, doesn't exactly take a lot of like intuition to have a sense of how that might have gone with Tocchet and sort of the risk profile of that player in this organization.
All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line into the final hour for the week. Next here, we'll see if there's any audio coming out of Canucks practice. We continue to take more of your text as well about the Canucks lineup going into the weekend. And then our guy, Dmitry Filipovich, joins us at 1:30 to wrap up the week here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Here it's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Trance. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650! 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I'm sure we have another hot-off-the-presses update.
Thank God.
On the soap opera that is the Vancouver Canucks as they practice at UBC today.
Josh Elliott Wolf, if you're not following him, Intrepid 650, yes. 650 home practice lines tweeter, and taker of the worst photos on the internet. My goodness.
The worst photojournalist who's ever lived.
If Josh was posting those photos and saying he found evidence of the existence of the Sasquatch, I'd be like, yeah, that is what that is. Indecipherable photography from Josh Elliott Wolf.
Yeah.
Anyway. Guy's got an eye made for radio, and you should go check out his Twitter feed. Anyway, JT Miller was asked about whether or not the practice kerfuffle gate 2024, is it worth talking about? He was asked. No, was his response. Thank you.
There you have it.
I'm so sick of this one, especially because I wasn't there.
Right, so you don't even have, like, your perspective, like, I mean, literal visual perspective to offer on it, right?
Yeah. But also, this stuff happens all the time. Like, I've seen so many times guys get mad at each other, take a whack at one another in a practice environment. Like, this stuff happens. I'm not criticizing anyone who passed it along, either. You know, like, Jeff Patterson had sort of the most thorough recap, and it's like, that's what people want, clearly. Like, clearly, people want to know. And he passed it along, by the way, with, like, no color. It's not like he put his... And then the conversation around it, my God, it's exhausting.
Yep. Not worth talking about per JT Miller, per Josh Elliott Wolf.
Per Thomas Drantz.
Per Thomas Drantz. There you go. The game of telephone.
Yeah.
But not without it getting distorted. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Without it getting distorted. Okay, thanks, man. Really important.
Well, that's part of telephone.
Okay. Really
part of telephone is you pass it along the chain and it comes out completely different at the other end. So I wanted to make sure that's not what's happening here.
I got a text from Bref this morning, by the way.
Yeah.
Saying that he heard we'd been ripping him for the Garland thing. And he said, I meant it as a compliment. And I said, we just thought you didn't use the word truther right. And he was like, I did use it wrong, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. That's accountability right there.
Yeah.
That's accountability from Jason. I did use it wrong, I guess. That's fantastic.
Yeah, fabulous stuff.
All right. We're going to hear from Rick Tockett and potentially JT Miller here. We'll see as well in just a second as we get the audio set to go here. But I wanted to read this text in. I think you'll like this one, Drancer. It's from John in the Fort, who says, the Canucks Central boys were going over defenseman trade targets yesterday, so I took a look at who could be a fit in a relatively weak rental pool. Is Will Borgen, unironically, the best defense target for the Canucks based on age, profile, handedness, and cap hit, not just because he's Drance's guy? That's from John in the Fort. Will Borgen content here on Canucks Talk, and I do think...
Don't tempt me with a good time.
I do think one of the key points there from John in the Fort is... there was a team... Oh, Montreal. Montreal, who's off to a horrible defensive start. The report was out there that they're looking for even a stopgap solution on the right side of their blue line in the top four. That's not even anything close to a contender. And even they are like, we're in the trade market for a right shot defenseman. So I think that illustrates the incredible disconnect between demand and supply of these players right now.
Did you see the Jay Fresh graph drop on Lane Hutson, by the way?
No, but I'm sure it was incredible.
It was so good.
Don't Habs fans already hate him because of Nick Suzuki? Didn't he give like a brutal graph for Nick Suzuki at one point?
Oh,
I think so.
Right, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like 6%. It's fabulous. It's just like, thank God, now we can stop this. Anyway, so Will Borgen, expiring contract UFA. He is 27. He's real good. $2.7 million. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That would be unbelievable. No, it would be. Like, this is... Exactly, and even if you can't get him in a trade, like, this is exactly the guy you go get at 4.5 times 5 as a second pair guy. Like, this is exactly the profile of defender to bet on, and this is exactly the contract to try and acquire. I think the problem you're going to bump into is the Seattle Kraken are, I think, closer to good than they are to
the seller team.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They have 4 wins in 8 games here, so they're true 500, 5.63 by point percentage. By the way, the Canucks, second in the Pacific by point percentage. So that means they're actually second in the Pacific.
It's all coming together.
All of a sudden, my point percentage agenda is in favor of the Canucks. The Canucks aren't fifth in the Pacific. They're second to the Calgary Flames, which means they'll be first in a week or a month or whatever. So everyone enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, I think the Kraken are good. Did you watch the game last night, them against Winnipeg?
No, I did not.
Fabulous. Like an awesome, an electric third period between the Seattle Kraken and the Winnipeg Jets. And most importantly, by far the most assertive and dynamic that Matty Beniers has looked since his rookie season. Like, he was great in that third period. Real signs of life from a guy who I still hold out hope for as an elite talent, even though we haven't seen it in a while. I think the Kraken are good. The way that they're able to play now, where you've got, you know, Vince Dunn and Larson, their sort of mainstay pair, where you've got the guy who sits back, and then you've Vince Dunn, who sort of functions as a rover and like actually like sometimes ends up below the goal line on the forecheck and stuff. But you've got these wingers that are good, reliable defensively, covering up, but also able to shoot like more dangerously than any defenseman would be able to from the point when the puck gets worked back. Like, it makes so much sense with the way that team's built to play that way. But now they have Montour, so they can, with Alexiak, so they kind of have the same dynamic on two pairs.
Yeah.
And so like almost all of their minutes now are played at that pace. I think they look good. I think they look not like really good, but like they look like a pesky team again. I think they look like a playoff caliber team potentially again. So, you know, that organization needs to make the playoffs. Like,
yes.
They need to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they'd have to be pretty far out of it to be selling contributors.
They signed two win-now free agents to, like, big-money contracts. Ron Francis, I think, is, you know, running a little shy on rope there, a little shy on patience. He's already fired the coach. You know what I mean? Like, he's on to his second head coach already.
Yep.
That they need to win. So I think Will Borgen's a perfect example of a dynamic that the Canucks themselves are already feeling, right? Like, we know how aggressive they are in terms of tinkering on the back end. And like, make no mistake, they know and want to add a top four upgrade. Now, here's sort of the difference between where the Canucks have been, I think, in previous years and now. Like, they want a top four upgrade now. They're not looking for a speculative guy who could maybe help out. Not to say that they won't take a shot at a guy like that. Those are the guys more likely to be available, but like, this club's managing their cap space just so, and they're, you know, looking to at some point probably bring in a major top four upgrade. And if that player was available on the market, they'd have made the deal already.
Yeah.
You know, like, they...
at a price they liked and all that, yeah.
Yeah, like, they are, and I wrote about this today, they're actively looking. They know what their biggest need is, right? This is a pretty smart organization. They know they're going to need defensive help. And they're looking around and they're saying, man, there is not a lot of talent available that's, you know, poised. And you made a good point bringing up the Shea Theodore, you know, extension is like a factor here, right? Like, the good players aren't going to get there.
Yeah.
The teams that might be sellers, well, they're off to good starts. We'll sort of see where this goes. With the way that almost every team, every contender in the NHL, go look at the top four of almost every contender in the NHL. And aside from like Vegas and... maybe New York, maybe the Rangers, maybe Carolina, maybe New Jersey. Like, those are sort of the four exceptions to the rule that all of them are going to need a top four defenseman at some point.
Yep.
And so the demand for these players is going to be enormous, and that's going to drive price high. And the supply of these players is non-existent virtually, especially early in the year.
Especially right now.
And that's also going to drive the prices high. Like, I honestly think we could be in for one of the most valuable sellers markets for defenders that we've ever encountered. I truly believe that. And so it's going to be especially if teams like Montreal are
that's what I
aggressively
mean.
Wanting to play in that market. Like, my God. So I think the Canucks are internally recognizing that while this would be their top priority and they'd like to accomplish something, they know it's going to be very, very difficult. And that's why the Brännström storyline is an interesting one, especially because there is a feeling internally that he's earned a little more rope, maybe earned a little more opportunity. And, you know, Cole McWard remains a guy to watch here. There's still some internal hope that he could be a partial answer or part of the solution to what Vancouver needs on the back end. And then I see Rick Tocchet discuss the possibility of Brännström playing on the right side. And that's another thing that I brought up here. Like, from what I hear, like, I think Brännström has opened or turned heads sufficiently that even when Forbert's back, he might not be the guy who draws out. He might be the guy who plays the right side with Forbert. So, you know, I think there's a fair bit of hope and excitement internally about what Brännström can do as he sort of continues to run with this opportunity that he's opened up, carved
very,
out for himself.
Very interesting. All right, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, the team practice at UBC today. They play the Penguins tomorrow. Here is Rick Tocchet.
Well, Rick, coming out of practice today and heading into the game tomorrow, we're riding three wins. How are you feeling?
Well, actually, really, the practice day, coming off a day off, we worked on some D-zone stuff. Actually, Footy put a really good video to get today about how to protect the ice a little bit better in front of our net. It's really clear, and I thought the guys took it in practice and applied it. So looking forward to see how we start to get better at that.
Yeah. Hard to get a rhythm when he hasn't played a whole lot yet.
I think you can say that a lot of teams, you know, summer off, come back, training camp, usually the first 10 games, there's some things that you got to work on, coverages and stuff like that. But the good thing is we're getting some offense, which is good. And, it gives us time to get our defensive structure back. But, I don't know if that's the case. But when you get time, don't play as many games. You get a lot of practice time, which I like.
Why do you think it takes a lot of teams in the league, a lot of high-scoring games with the D-zone coverage? It's not like they've forgotten it all. Is it emotional stuff, too, that they aren't as desperate to defend?
Ocean up top, going down low. So, sometimes you have four guys up top, and then two defensemen. I've seen two defensemen go down low and a forward back them up. So there's different coverages they're throwing at you now. You know, coaches around the league are smart. You know, they're going to throw different. So I think for us, it really doesn't matter what they're throwing at us. We still have to stay in our structure. I think we're switching too much. I think there's a little bit of newness from some guys from different systems. You got to throw that into play. So, I just think that, I've seen a little bit better over the last couple of games when it comes to D-zone. But I think something that we got to really continue to work at.
Rick, how close is Dakota to shedding the non-contact jersey?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's really close. And it's really going to, I hate to say it, going to be up to him. I think you take it to a certain level when you're cleared. He hasn't cleared yet, but where he's going to go, I feel a lot better. So I think a lot is going to be on him when he's really ready, but we still got to prepare him on the ice.
Have you seen, I know you talked about it, I think in Chicago, about him needing to bump and work.
Yeah.
Have you seen progression in the last couple of practices where he looked pretty much fully involved out there now?
Yeah, I want to see him these 2-on-2. He needs a few more practices of really getting in there, getting hit from behind a little bit, I think you can skate a guy as much as you can, but if you don't get action around you, from behind you, in front of you, I think that's the next step for him.
What have you seen from Brännström so far?
I think every game he's improved. His confidence level with the puck. The one thing I like, there's about two or three times in the last game where he skated out of trouble. He just didn't throw it off the glass. There was a couple windows for him to skate it out. He did. But that's big. You know how Hughes can do it a lot. I think he has a little bit of that in him where he can skate himself out of trouble.
Is there any extra he's going to have to do for, say, when Footy comes back, to keep himself in the lineup?
For Brännström?
Yeah.
Well, Footy showed a clip today where he had a bigger guy going to the net and he boxed the guy out. I mean, if he can do that, he's going to stay in the lineup. I think just because he's a smaller guy, you can still get in front of people, but I just think he's improved every game.
Could he be a right side option? I know you like lefty righties, but if you want to keep him in the lineup, could he be a right side guy?
Well, it's funny you asked that because we checked analytics. He did play the right side for some games and did okay analytically. So that's something that we could experiment with him playing on the other side. Yes.
Rick, Pittsburgh's in town. McDavid comes out and says that Team Canada, Crosby should be the captain. What is it about him and that makes Like, why is he so important to the league, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's not just, you know, you're talking about one of the, you know, McDavid, best player in the league. When I went to that Four Nations Summit we had, you know, I remember Doug Armstrong said, it's unanimous. All the big guys said that century of the captain. It's not even McDavid. So I think he's the, quote unquote, the godfather of that team. So, you know, I don't think anybody would want to wear the C other than Sid, because just his approach to the game, what he means to the game and what he means to his teammates.
We're coming up to the 15th anniversary of that 2010 Olympics. What is it about Crosby that he's been able to just keep that longevity for so long of being a top player?
His obsession of the game, to get better, to stay with the big guys in the league. You know, he does, you know, even, what is he, 38? I don't know. Is 37, yeah. They'll kill me. But I just think that, you know, anytime you mention top players, he's still there at 37. It's amazing. So I have so much respect for him, the way he plays and approaches the game.
We're 2 days on from PD and JT getting into the practice. What are your thoughts on why this just kind of resonated?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. I mean, it was great practice again today. No, we want guys to practice hard against each other. And sometimes you're going to get that, and you move on from it. So, you know, it's not even a big deal.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after the team practiced out at UBC today. And again, reiterating, not a big deal in his view, the scuffle. The kerfuffle scuffle between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson at practice a couple of days ago.
Kerfuffle gate. 2020, whatever it is.
Yep. Probably the most newsworthy item there from Rick Tocchet says that Dakota Joshua really close to getting out of the non-contact jersey and just being a standard full participant. And I know it sounds like, based on what he's been doing at these practices, he's pretty close to a full participant.
You know what else it sounded like? A herd of elephants.
Yes.
Running
sure
through
did.
The scrum.
It always sounds like that at UBC.
Man, that would drive me
clangy.
That, like, just like old PR guy thing, that would drive me bonkers. I would be losing my mind. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways.
UBC, probably not a good enough facility for an NHL
let's
team.
Let's go ahead and get that practice rink. Joshua, quote, really close to being a just a complete full participant at practice per Rick Tocchet. You know, we heard the 1 to 2 week report from Frank Saravalli earlier this week. And interesting to hear the Tocchet. You know, obviously this is not a traditional hockey injury that Dakota Joshua is coming back from here. So I think it's pretty understandable. There's going to be this element of just feel and, hey, how are you feeling? What are the next steps, right? Rather than your typical rehab process. But good news, more good news from Dakota Joshua. And as Rick Tocchet says, you know, it'll kind of just depend on how he feels here as we see when he's going to take the next steps. And then also, you know, we were talking about Erik Brännström just before we threw to Rick Tocchet, and Brännström getting some praise from the head coach as well, right? Saying, hey, he's improved with every game. You can see the confidence he has with the puck. And then really specifically pointing to his ability not just to make a first pass. I think sometimes we focus on that element of puck moving a lot, but what Brännström has shown, the ability to skate it out of trouble, right? To use his mobility to find advantages for the team.
When I'd add this, because this is one of the most important things that you need to do as a transitional defenseman, and I think this is why speed kills in the NHL right now, but the retrievals, the feel for pressure on dump-ins, right? The ability to get back first and make the play is one of the most difficult plays in hockey. We see so many goals scored off of errors, and not errors, because it's really hard with NHL forwards applying pressure as F1 to make good plays in those spots. Brännström's been excellent at that, and I think that's helped actually insulate Desharnais too. I think it's why you've got, you know, a run of really strong performances as well from that duo as a pair. And, you know, you sort of hope that maybe there's a chemistry they're building where they can sort of be more than the sum of their parts, almost like a blue line version of what Garland and Joshua were last season.
Yes.
Yeah.
Canucks love their size gap pairings. Their size
their
gap
Danny
duos.
DeVito, Arnold
Schwarzenegger pairings.
Yeah. So good.
The twins pairing, Desharnais and Erik Brännström. But it's kind of funny, right? Because, I mean, we were even just talking about it, and obviously they're not Vince Dunn and Adam Larson, obviously, right? But like, sometimes I think it's a cliche, the, hey, you know, you have the puck mover and the stay-at-home guy. But I think especially from the stay-at-home guy's perspective, like, it makes a lot of sense to try to find players that complement each other, that bring that different skill set. And, I mean,
I do think it's a bit passe, though. Like, you know what you really want is two guys
that
can
move the puck
and defend.
Yes.
Like, that's really what you want. And, you know, that's, I think you're moving out of teams viewing pairs through that cliched prism, right? The idea of one guy who does one thing and one guy who does another thing, like, that limits you. What you want is Hughes Hronek.
But if you
what
have
you want
two,
is Taves Makar.
If you have two limited players at the bottom of your lineup, right? I think it makes sense still to have that complementary aspect, right? Rather than having two guys who are limited in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think that's what we're seeing here. And again, I do think Derek Forbort was better in the few games he played than Desharnais was in terms of moving the puck. But obviously it's not his greatest skill either, right? So you throw two guys like that together, and I think especially in this day and age, as you said, with the intensity on the forecheck from the forwards, how difficult it is to make plays in those situations, that's going to be a tough situation for two more defensively oriented guys. And just bringing that fresh element that Erik Brännström brings has made a big difference for that third pair. We'll see if he can keep it up as he looks to get another shot to stay in the lineup and play against the Penguins tomorrow night at Rogers Arena. All right, we're going to take a break here. Dmitry Filipovich, as always, joins us in the next segment. We'll get his thoughts on the Canucks' upcoming opponents. Three Eastern Conference teams coming into Rogers Arena over the next week. The Penguins tomorrow, then you've got the Hurricanes and the Devils next week. So we'll talk to Dmitry about that, what he's seeing from the Canucks, maybe what he's seeing from Elias Pettersson a little bit as well. That's coming up next year on.
And Cole Perfetti. We'll talk about Cole Perfetti's exceptional play in that third period in Seattle last night.
All right.
Night.
And
no? And
Cole Perfetti.
Cole Perfetti is sick.
You can,
man.
If you want.
I'm serious. I think
honestly, it's the last segment of the week. I don't care. Just go nuts. You and Dmitry talk about whatever you want.
I'm telling you right now, if Cole Perfetti played in any other Canadian market, though, he'd be such a big deal.
That is probably true.
And we'd never talk about him.
It's true.
I'm going to show you his setup on the Nino Niederreiter goal last night because it was absolutely sick.
All right, Dmitry Filipovich next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, final segment of the week. We're live from the Kintec Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Very pleased, as always, on a Friday afternoon to be joined in studio by our guy, the host of the Hockey PDO Cast. On the Sportsnet Radio Network, he is Dmitry Filipovich. What's up, buddy?
Fellas, what's going on? I missed you last Friday. I was on the IR.
It's tough.
Didn't feel the same.
Drantz wasn't here.
Ugh.
I know. I barely knew that it was Friday.
Were you just drafting by yourself?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you
not
now.
Far off.
I'm going to tell you now what the draft is so you can prepare over the course of the segment.
All right.
Thank you for giving me 15 minutes to prepare while I'm also talking on air.
You're not going to need that much time, okay? I figured we could do this because I thought the defense one, like I actually think maybe we should play more drafts straight and do the silly ones for fun as opposed to always drafting silly things.
Mm-hmm.
We try to like alternate, I would say.
I know, but I don't want to alternate anymore. I want to throw a curveball like, every, you know,
like
less frequently.
Serious.
Yeah, because
I
have fun drafting real things.
Sure.
And so I was thinking we should draft active Canucks who are on the 23-man roster today, okay, for the purpose of building the best power play unit, and then we see who has the best power play unit.
Okay, I'm in.
It's gonna get greasy by the end
of it. Sure is.
Yeah, because we have to pick 15 players.
Neil's them on. Come on down.
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Like literally, if you want to go 4-1, like if you don't want to be a boomer,
yep,
you got to have Neil's them on. Like one of us is gonna end up with Amon.
Yep.
I guess he could
probably
be the
not.
He could be the 13th forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Anyway.
Wait. We should include guys who are in Abbotsford though.
No, active roster.
What?
Yeah, because that's the purpose.
No, I agree.
What do you mean?
Like, because if you want to bring Lekker Mäki up to be a power play specialist.
He hasn't even played yet this year.
For this.
Okay, what about Brännström?
Brännström's here.
On the roster.
Oh, okay.
Recall
today. Okay, nice.
Yeah.
There you go.
So you can have Brännström.
All right. Oh, I gave away my draft strategy.
You're punting on the blue line, so you get Brännström late.
Well, he's going to be my net front guy.
Yeah, nice. So let's talk Penguins.
Oh.
They roll into town on Saturday.
Yep.
It'll be the second leg of a back-to-back against the Edmonton Oilers. The Canucks are -175 favorites, 64% implied probability of victory. Is that justified? Are the Penguins a mess?
They are. I mean, with the caveat that it's professional hockey, mm-hmm. and whenever you feel like something's going to happen, generally the NHL throws a curveball, sure. and the Penguins are miraculously going to play a perfect game. They've been arguably the worst defensive team in the league this season. I think the Montreal Canadiens yes. certainly have a claim to that as well. But considering their roster composition, which is a bunch of like veterans and established players, as opposed to Canadiens who are like trying to integrate young talent into the NHL, they've been so disorganized, so undisciplined. They're giving up odd man rushes. Like, if anyone's going to make this Canucks team look like
good on the rush,
look like peak Colorado Avalanche, it's going to be this Pittsburgh team. They keep getting guys caught down low in the offensive zone and giving up 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s, breakaways. They're losing coverage in front of their net. Both of their top defense pairs just can't do anything in their own zone. And so, yeah, this is like the Canucks should be just salivating at this matchup because this is a really good one for us.
Was this an issue for the Penguins last season? Or, like, obviously it's to a greater extent now, but is this kind of coming out of nowhere, or is this like the culmination of something we've seen in their game for a while?
Yeah, I think it was bubbling last year, certainly. They weren't nearly to this level. Sure. I think this is like the extreme version of it. I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe it's the players a year older. Maybe it's mm-hmm. like, if you look at how long Mike Sullivan's been there, I think everyone agrees he's a pretty good coach, but everyone kind of reaches a expiry date yep. behind the bench, and he's been there for so long. Maybe they're just tuning him out. I'm not sure what's going on, because the personnel shouldn't be 32nd or 31st in the league defensively, even if it's not that good. So yeah, it's been really tough. And I don't know, watching that team, you still got Crosby and Malkin and Carlson, and you tune in for that. But I imagine the existence right now of a Pittsburgh Penguins fan is pretty bleak, because it's not like there's even young talent on this roster where you're like, all right, well, there's light at the end of the tunnel where in a few years this guy could be still a contributor for us. Like, you look at the lineup right now, and there's no one that really even fits that bill.
I wonder if how much of it is just, like, it's one thing for one of your key players to get a year older and be in their late 30s, but when you have, like, 3-4 guys, even Carlson's, what, 34 now, right? It's just that, like, cumulative aging process that the drop-off can be even steeper than we think sometimes. You know, you see, like, oh, they'll decline a little bit, but then all of a sudden, at least in one aspect of the game, it can be more like a cliff when you have that many guys aging simultaneously on a team. Even really good players, great players.
I think it can. I think we're seeing it. Looks like Blomqvist is going to get the start tonight for the Penguins, meaning it'll be Nedeljkovic,
mm-hmm.
I suppose, is their third goaltender. Is Tristan Jarry, Vancouver's Tristan Jarry, is there a redemption arc here? I mean, has he been let down by his defense, or do they just have real significant issues in net?
It's a combination of the two. He certainly yeah. hasn't played well, but also, as I said, like, it's just one odd man rush after another. Guys just blown assignments in front of the goalie. Like, they're kind of leaving their goalies out to dry as well. So I get it, because of the contract, the investment they made to him. I guess his reputation as being, like, at least a reliable goalie. The fact that he hasn't been that is why there's this mass panic. But ultimately, I think you have to look from the net out for like explanations for what's going on there. So yeah, I don't know. I'm curious, Tom, for your take on this, because there's a conspiracy theory that the Penguins, despite, you know, keeping up appearances and they trade for Carlson, right? Like, they're trying to be competitive during this Crosby era. There's a conspiracy theory that they're just low key trying to tank without necessarily like admitting as much, because they have Sidney Crosby and they want to keep him for the rest of his career there. But then you watch him and it's like this Matt Grizzlick, Chris Letang pairing is one of the biggest signs I've ever seen of a team tanking. Like, they're just like completely dysfunctional. It almost looks like they're not practicing at all. I don't know what's going on with that team, but they're giving off all the like hints and smells of a team that is tanking without coming out in the media and being like, yeah, we want to suck.
The Jim Benning.
I don't think that one was intentional.
I mean, I don't know. I don't buy the conspiracy theory. I think they're trying to...
They think this team can compete.
I think they are trying to responsibly manage decline. Like, I think they're trying to compete in a way that doesn't actually cost them what it would cost them to take a credible shot at it. So it's like they'll pay for Carlson, but what they're paying is contractual flexibility. You know, they'll sign free agents, but I think they're trying to do it within the vestiges of like being mindful of mm-hmm. still accumulating future talent. And so I think when you're, you know, trying to walk that tightrope, the path is just preposterously narrow.
They're trying to do just enough so they can say they're trying. Right? I think that's it. More than that they're trying to take.
No, because I think they are trying. I just think they're trying I think they're trying with both hands tied behind their back, and as a result, they have no margin for error, and so
It's tight.
I just feel like if you compare them, maybe this
they
is
don't
bit-
have outs though, right? Like that's it. They need to like strike their one path to being decent enough to make the playoffs.
I mean, this might be a lazy comparison because of like the Crosby-Ovechkin connection until the end of time. But when you compare them to the Washington Capitals, who actually tried,
yeah,
to be competitive without necessarily, I wouldn't say they've necessarily mortgaged the future. It's not like they've given up a ton of premium assets.
And I think they've done it. That blue line looks awesome.
They look phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, they're playing really well, and you compare them to the Penguins, who I think had all of those same opportunities for the most part available to them, and they haven't really exhausted any options. I know they made the Carlson trade, but ultimately, yeah, it's like, beyond that, they just brought this group back that really struggled last year, and they're like, all right, we're going to put Anthony Beauvillier on the top line. It's like, I don't know if you actually think that's going to be the answer unless you are trying to tank.
Like, I think the root of this for the Penguins is the Ron Hextall era, where they started the managed decline thing too early. I think if you go back to that time, if they had been willing to be really aggressive, they could have still been Stanley Cup contenders.
But
now you age it up, and it's like, well, now they should be managed decline, but there's all this frustration built up from the from wasting those years, that like there's all this discontent in the fan base now.
But I think the thing was that then you had enough runway where you could have done like a 2-year rebuild and still come up again with some elite talent around Sidney Crosby while he was still, like, Crosby needed to his version of what, like, you know, anyway.
He'd kill for like a Dylan Strome right now, for example, comparing it to the Caps, right?
Yeah.
Who were able to get guys like that on the cheap and actually are top of the lineup guys, as opposed to the Penguins just basically recycling people.
But I think Jamie does make a good point, where it's like the damage that was done in sort of the 2 years after Rutherford and company left, I think made this an impossible task for Dubas and company.
They should have taken one of the aggressive paths available to them.
Yeah.
Either like keep pushing all in like Rutherford did, because you have these guys who are still elite players,
or tear it down short
in a real short term way. Yeah. But instead, they just kind of muddled through and they wasted really good years in Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, they had an opportunity to reload, and now it feels like a rebuild is going to be the only way back to being a great team again, which sucks. Carolina and New Jersey are then in. Are those
your favorite team, the Hurricanes?
Yeah. They played a fun game in Calgary last
night.
It was actually very eventful.
It was a good time.
Yep.
It was actually an electric night of hockey last night.
It was.
The way. With Carolina, are they among the class of the East again? Like, is this a team that's just going to be 106 points and you're going to be grumbling about it all season?
Yeah, they're a well-oiled machine. I mean, the process is down pat. They've got it all sorted out. Like, they're definitely, especially when you don't play them every night, like in a playoff setting, if they're just coming into town like this and all of a sudden they just throw a couple haymakers at you, you're like, man, these guys are relentless. They just won't stop forechecking, and it's just shot after shot, and you just kind of have to adjust to it. By that point, it's too late. So this is how they pile up the regular season wins, and that's why they're such a tricky opponent.
4-2-0 with 11 5-on-5 goals is the most Hurricanes thing ever, I think.
Yeah, 11 goals on 166 shots on goal. Nice.
Somehow 4-2 with a 6.63 5-on-5
shooting
percentage.
In the era of like massively spiking shooting percentage, they're like, no, we're not going to do it.
That is brilliant. I love everything about the bit.
I will say, Sean Gostisbehere has been a really nice. I know he was there two years ago, right? But bringing him back, he's running the top unit power play. They're really effective again. He had an awesome game in Edmonton the other night. Scored the one goal, and then in overtime made the nice pass to set up the eventual winner by Aho. So he actually provides a little bit of a dynamic, kind of like fun, unpredictable element from the back end for them there. Mm-hmm. So I do like that. Tom and I have had a lot of arguments about this over the years, including at the start of this season, again, rehashing it. He believes that they finally understand the error of their ways. They're just biding their time until they bring in another Jake Ensel type addition this season. So if that happens, we can revisit this and I'll be excited about it. But for the time being, I think you know what you're going to get from them.
For the Devils.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I just one more. Is William Carrier the world's most Hurricanes player?
Oh, yeah. We're going to dump this puck in and go and throw 6 million body checks, baby.
But it's like kind of great, right?
Yeah.
I'm here for it. I just like, it hadn't occurred to me until I was watching them a little bit earlier this season, and I was just like, oh man, I didn't understand how perfect this fit would be. So anyway, something to watch for.
I think when I think back on this era of Hurricanes hockey, it's going to be Jordan Martinook that stands out to me.
As he should.
As the exemplary Hurricanes player.
Well, as he should. And I still think the world where Stahl Martinook's minutes become replaced by guys who are far more likely to score but can still do Stahl and Martinook stuff, I think that's when they're going to arrive as a team that can score enough to really win and challenge for a cup.
Yep.
All right, the Devils, obviously the Jacob Markstrom acquisition, their big deal of the offseason, and they're 5-4-1 out of the gates. Markstrom's numbers aren't great either. Is there is there defensive cause for concern here? Is it Markstrom? What are you seeing from the Devils?
Yeah, he started off well, and then the past couple games they really got lit up. I forget, they gave, maybe 4 or 5 goals up to Detroit yesterday. They had the game where they gave up 7 or 8 goals, Jake Allen did, to Tampa Bay, so I think that's kind of ballooned their numbers a little bit here. I don't think there's defensive concerns, really. Like, if you go back and watch last night's game in particular, the game-winning goal is like a Patrick Kane point shot, essentially, yes, that Jacob Markstrom actually has a clean look at, and it just goes by him.
Yep.
And everyone wants to credit, like, Patrick Kane, he still got it. And it's like, I don't know, that was a point shot that a goalie probably should have stopped. So it happens. I'm not going to necessarily put too much stock into it. I still think he's a massive upgrade for them, particularly stylistically. It hasn't gone the way they wanted to. They're getting healthy, though, right? Last night, they got Luke Hughes back. They got Brett Pesce back into the lineup, so I think that's going to help their defense fall into place. And so, yeah, I'm still pretty high on them. They're playing well. Like, they're generating a lot offensively. They're playing a very up-tempo style again. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to be encouraged despite the recent results.
What was your take on the empty netter last night?
It was funny. Yes. I don't know. Like, I found it amusing. Also, it's like, I'm not going to, I get why people are going to poke fun at Jack Hughes about it, but like,
no,
he made a massive effort to try and stop it happening. If he dogs it back, everyone's going to be like, oh, look at him. He just gave up. He doesn't try. So,
well, you don't end up on a poster unless you try and block the
of course, dunk, you know, so I'm all for it.
Yeah. I'm all for it too. That's such a good take and such an important one. Leave it all on the ice, Jack Hughes. All right, let's draft a Canucks power play units. These are going to be dusty.
Yes, they are. They sure are.
So, who picked first?
I had the first pick last time, and I won the draft decisively as a result of it. So, I will concede.
I don't think, you know what, in this one though, I don't think it's that important. So let's let Jamie. Jamie, you can decide draft order.
You can go first, Jamie. If you don't,
yeah,
think
sure,
it's
I'll go first. Whatever.
Okay, we'll go. You first. Do you want the snake spot?
Sure,
that is the best spot.
That'd be nice.
Yeah,
that is the best spot. I'll take Quinn Hughes first.
Okay,
quarterback.
Yeah, I'll take JT Miller.
Yeah. I should have taken the second pick.
No, I don't think so. I think getting the two other forwards
give me Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser there. I do think JT Miller's downhill wrister and also like his 100%. Vision on the cross ice unlocks a lot more than the two guys I got with.
Totally. And at the end, too, we're going to say where we're playing them.
Okay.
Right? So I've got Miller. So I've got Miller where a righty would be. So I need a left-handed shot, and I'm going to take Filip Hronek, realistically. I'm going to take Filip Hronek, very happy with that as my second pick.
All right, I am going to take Connor Garland.
Okay.
And I'm going to take Jake DeBrusk.
Good stuff. Are you keeping track? Of everyone's?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Can you pull the list back up, Tom?
Yep.
Instead of sending an email?
Sorry. No, I was going to start writing down where guys were because I wasn't keeping track.
Okay.
I'm going to take Daniel Sprong.
Oh, no.
It's a good pick. It's a good pick.
It's a great pick. It's arguably the only pick.
It's the right pick.
Yep. So I'm up with two picks here.
Yeah. And you've got Besser and you've got Patterson.
Thrilled about it.
Oh, my God. This is tough.
I knew it would be. That's why I thought it would be fun.
Okay. Give me Pius Suter here.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
I like it.
I was hoping that he'd be, like, left loose change for me.
And my next pick, I mean, just from a skill perspective, I got to go with Nils Höglander here.
Yeah, I think those are good picks. I'm going to take Dakota Joshua, throw him at the net front.
Now, technically not on the 23
man roster.
Yeah,
not on the active
roster. On IR still.
Ooh. I got beat on a loophole.
Yeah.
No.
Beat on a technicality.
Brutal. That is a bad look for your boy. Okay. Well, then. I'm going to take...
Trance is so shook.
I'm so shook.
This whole thing was building to him drafting Dakota Joshua.
Now this is peak filibustering right here.
I'm going to take... Well, you know what? I'm going to get aggressive, and I'm going to take Erik Brännström.
All right.
So this guy is shutting Dmitri out. He's talking about going boomer and having two defensemen at the start of the draft.
If I can't have the draft that I want, I might as well make sure I finish at least second.
My God.
That is fantastic. Coming in and taking out Dmitri at the knees. All right, it's me with my final two picks here.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Quinn Hughes. I've got Connor Garland. I've got Jake DeBrusque. Oh, boy. I'm going to go with Teddy Bluger, and I'm going to go with Arshdeep Bains as my two final selections here.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with Kiefer Sherwood. Very mm-hmm. happy with that as a final pick. And then, Dmitri, you got a defenseman to draft.
Not necessarily.
No, yeah, you could go
five forwards.
You could go with Nils Åman.
Man, I really don't like where I'm at here. You know what? Give me Tyler Myers.
Yeah.
I'm going to bomb from the point.
That's
baby.
The right call. Okay, so tell us our lists, and then we can all lay out our power play units.
Quinn Hughes, Connor Garland, Jake DeBrusque, Teddy Bluger, Arshdeep Bains.
And where are you playing them?
All right, so I'm going to Quinn Hughes at the point, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Connor Garland on his one-timer spot.
Yep, left flank.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jake DeBrusque in the bumper, Teddy Bluger, net front, and Arshdeep Bains on the right flank. That's my unit. You have JT Miller, Philip Roenick, Daniel Sprong, Eric Brandstrom. Who was your last guy?
I took Kiefer Sherwood.
Kiefer Sherwood.
So
set it up for us.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to go JT Miller on his one-timer side. I'm going to not have him.
Wow.
We're going to have a motion power play, so it's going to be fine. He's going to end up on that downhill side a fair bit, but I want him on his one-timer side because I want to play Philip Roenick on the left flank so that he's also on his one-timer side. Then I'll have Eric Brandstrom running the point. And then I'll put Kiefer Sherwood in the bumper. And who was the other guy I drafted?
Sprong.
Oh, I have Sprong. So no, sorry, man. JT Miller is going to be at the net front. Then I'm going to have Sprong and Horonic at the flanks. Sprong on his downhill side.
Love to take JT Miller first and then take the puck out of his hands for Eric Brandstrom to run things.
This is a coach setting his players up to succeed.
This did not work out the way I'd envisioned. Okay. Brandstrom point.
Roenick one timer.
Maybe I'm putting, you know what, I'm just...
Wow, Drans is
I'm so shook. I'm so shook. Screw it. I'm putting Brandstrom at the bumper. I'm putting Horonic at the point. I'm putting Sprong and Miller on their one-timer sides on the flanks, and Kiefer Sherwood's living at the net front for me. Let's go.
All right, I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Tyler Myers is going to the net front?
Tyler Myers net front.
Love it.
Elias Pettersson at the point.
I love it.
I'm going to have him at the top of the umbrella.
Yeah, it's fun.
Distributing.
Yeah.
Potentially even shooting.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to have... What I have Höglander,
and
Höglander, Besser, and Suter.
So I'm gonna have, for the bit I probably should have just put Myers at the point. It would have made more sense.
No. Myers at the point, Myers at the net front, Pettersson
yep.
at the point.
Yep.
Besser and Höglander one timers.
Opposing flanks.
Suter in the
bumper. Yeah, that's right.
You might win.
No,
that's actually pretty.
Mine's the best power play. Dimitri's is the one I want to see the most.
And I just didn't.
Yours
well.
Is not, NA.
If I'd gotten Joshua, it would have all made sense. But I messed that up.
I do think. Wouldn't it feel great as Elias Pettersson to just step into some slap shots right now? I feel
seriously,
like that would do a world of good for him. Put him at the point and just feed him some one-timers. Let him hammer the puck at the net.
I'll be honest with you, too. I'm pretty confident that like you could put Quinn Hughes on the flank or in the bumper, and it would be like, yeah, that works. He's really good at
Quinn
that.
Hughes you could put anywhere.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't, I wouldn't want him at the net front.
Anywhere other than the net front. Yeah. You could put him pretty much anywhere.
Well, he'd probably figure out the net front, too, but I don't want him standing in front of slap shots.
No, you don't want him taking cross checks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting absolutely wrecked in front of the net there.
Well that's right. Too bad. I really messed that up.
You know what, though? If you hadn't taken Kiefer Sherwood last, I was going to go five forwards.
Yeah, nice.
That would have been Kiefer Sherwood?
Yep.
That would have been fun.
That
would have
been
that.
Fun.
Somebody should have gone five forwards. Somebody should
I was going to, but then Thomas just ruined my plans.
My bad.
And we left Danton Heinen out.
I should have taken Danton. Yeah, this was not. I did not cover myself in glory here.
Tried
Sorry
to set
that.
It up for you to win, and it failed miserably. But you'll have another chance next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for texting. The Canucks and the Penguins play tomorrow. We will be back on Monday to break it all down. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.